Good to see you today. Happy New Year greetings as well, right? I'll join the bandwagon there and greet you as well for a Happy New Year. We are going to be working through the New Testament, as Deli said already. I'm standing over here thinking you're blessed to be here today. If you caught any of the last 40 minutes that I caught in this place, to feel connected to the Lord, connected to community, a depth that is not always experienced and not always felt and frankly not always enjoyed, but I enjoyed it today, the presence of the Lord and the community together. I really encourage you to make yourself available. This is my encouragement for you. Make yourself available. A verse in Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 8 essentially says this: we're not only going to share the gospel with you, but we're going to share our lives as well. Not just the gospel, but we're going to share our lives as well. That is a statement of availability, putting yourself in a position to be able to share your life, putting yourself in a position so that there is an intersection. We lived years ago in New England on an island. The island is called Rhode Island. Locals call it Aquidneck, but the town of Newport is there, about 70,000 people. Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example, had a house there, like those kinds of Hollywood people, athletes, things like that, had homes there. And what we found is that you drive down the road, these beautiful, it was an island, so every road was a coastal road, right? You drive down and you see the bay, the Narragansett Bay and the Saconnet River, and it's glorious, and Block Island is off into the distance and that kind of thing, that kind of picture. And then you drive by and you'd see these built up walls and shrubbery and bamboo and gates, and the only way you got to see what was behind it was Google Maps. That's it. Because they had effectively spent tons of money on a beautiful, beautiful home that the only people that got to see it were the people they wanted to see it. And they had essentially a long driveway and blocked off access from what we actually call, because it's actually historically what they were called up there, the footstools. Right? The footstools were not allowed on the property. They were able to drive the roads and just kind of peek over the fence. No footstools around here. We're going to be open with our lives. We're going to share the gospel, and we're going to share our lives. And I encourage you to participate in these weekly readings. Again, one a day, weekdays, five a week. I encourage you to be here tomorrow for prayer, Tuesday for prayer, and Wednesday for prayer. I get it that you're praying. That wasn't the point. The point is not, please come here so you'll pray. The point is, please come here so we can pray together. And the connections of those things. So, whatever has to happen to get that on your calendar over the next 3 days, I'd love for you to be able to do that. And whatever part of that you can be here, the community that's built and then the shared experiences that move forward happen no other way. That's how they happen, and that's where the strength comes from. So I encourage you to be here for that. I'm excited about this, starting 2022 with our reading through the New Testament. We did this literally 5 years ago, 2017. The entire church walked through the New Testament. It was beautiful. It was such an encouraging, edifying, strengthening, connecting time. And the other day I thought, it's been 5 years. Let's do it again. That's about as deep as it got right there. That was my seeking the Lord. I'm like, you know, it's been 5 years. We need to do this again. And here we are. So encourage you to be a part of that. This week we're going with Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. We're going to go 1 through 5, Matthew 1 through 5. So here we go. Let's dive in. I'll put it up on the screen behind me. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac the father of Jacob. Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Aminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nahshon, Nahshon, the father of Salmon, Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab, Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of King David. Now David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife, Solomon, the father of Rehoboam, Rehoboam, the father of Abijah, Abijah, the father of Asa, Asa, the father of Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat, the father of Jehoram, Jehoram, the father of Uzziah, Uzziah, the father of Jotham, Jotham, the father of Ahaz, Ahaz, the father of Hezekiah, Hezekiah, the father of Manasseh, Manasseh, the father of Ammon, Ammon, the father of Josiah, and Josiah, the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the exile to Babylon. Take a breath. After the exile to Babylon, Jeconiah was the father of Shealtiel, Shealtiel, the father of Zerubbabel, Zerubbabel, the father of Abiud, Abiud, the father of Eliakim, Eliakim, the father of Azor, Azor, the father of Zadok, Zadok, the father of Achim, Achim, the father of Eliud, Eliud, the father of Eleazar, Eleazar, the father of Methan, Methan, the father of Jacob. You're welcome. You don't have to read that part. Got through that. Yeah. Whew. Goodness. Now, let's get to the good stuff. In fact, that will be my title for the day. Let's get to the good stuff. Okay. Verse 16. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who's called Christ. Continuing on, 17. Thus there were 14 generations in all from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile in Babylon, and 14 from the exile to the Christ. This is how the birth of Jesus came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be with child through the Holy Spirit. So finally, we get to something meaningful. But my question would be this. This last verse that I read, that we all went through all last month. I mean, that's December, right? It's Mary and Joseph and Jesus and the baby and the whole deal. Is that more meaningful? Or is it just something that we more readily recognize? So when we read through the first 15, and you got the NIV, old school, I would have said begat 157 times. And he begat him, and he begat. We used to just call it the begats. Can we just get through the begats? They have no purpose for me. Like, I don't need to know any of that. Not applicable here. No meaning there. Can we get to the real good stuff? Can we get to the good stuff? But I wonder how many times we skip through all those to get to the good parts and we miss the good parts. So as you're reading these scriptures, one chapter a day, my encouragement would be that you don't just check the box. None of us want to do stuff to just check a box. By the way, I did pick up, my spiritual sense did pick up that people were bumming about not getting a certificate. So I'll see, this week I will just give you a certificate, okay? Just get that over with. You don't have to sweat it. We'll just give you the certificate up front. You can do with it what you want, right? Not about that. But neither is it about just reading as quick as you can. Anybody else excellent at reading fast, but comprehension requires you to read slow? Right? That's the difference. I can read as fast as anybody. In fact, when you have those little icebreaker things with people and you have to tell something about yourself that, you know, no one would know, the one that I've shared many, many times throughout the years is I am a ridiculously slow reader. Like when it comes to reading, I am slow. Now, you can play back the tape. I read through those begats. That wasn't slow. But comprehension, I have to slow her down. And I know that about myself. I have to slow that down. And I also want it to be one a week, one a day, so that you can just look at it, think about it, ponder it, look at different translations, have it read to you, something like that, where you actually get into the scripture. So here we go. Let's finally get to the good stuff. I want us to read from the heart of the writer. How many Gospels? We say there are four, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Matthew, Mark, and Luke we consider the synoptic Gospels. They all came together. John was written much later. Many would say that Mark wrote first, probably around 50, AD 50. Mark wrote first, and then Matthew and Luke followed him. It was oral tradition. A lot of times it was combined and they tagged some guy's name, right, for the punch, the heavy punch, right, some of that. Mark wasn't an original disciple. Matthew was. Luke wasn't. John was the beloved disciple. John doesn't write his for almost 50 years after Christ's death and resurrection, right? So the perspectives of those things, who Matthew was, what he was about. Again, he was a Jew. Luke was a Gentile. Mark was a nephew or cousin of Barnabas, right? He had some time with Paul, but then got kicked to the curb because he was a little waffly. And then Paul said, bring him back. Like, there's all this backstory that's wonderfully rich when it comes together. So what I want us to do as we walk through Matthew, I'm going to do my best to help us with this through these many months here before us, that we look at the heart of the writer. So again, Matthew was in the original 12. You might know that he was a tax collector. That has its own angle. Matthew was a Jew. That has its own angle. He looks at Jesus as Messiah King. That's important to remember. Matthew looks at Jesus as Messiah, Jesus Christ, right? Christ is not his last name, right? It's not Andy Smith, Jesus Christ, right? Jesus the Christ, the Messiah, the Redeemer, the Rescuer. That's what Christ would mean. So he sees Jesus as Messiah, but he sees him as Messiah King. Luke sees Jesus as Messiah, but he sees him as Messiah man. Would that make sense? He's a Gentile, and he's a doctor, he's a physician. He would see the humanity of Jesus as Messiah, but as Messiah man. Matthew the Jew sees Jesus as Messiah King. It's the first verse. Can you throw that up there, man? You're going to earn your money today, pal. Back there. 73 cents an hour you're making back there. You're going to earn that. Verse 1, it says, Jesus Christ, the Son of David. That's the intro right there. That's what we start with. That's where Matthew's coming from. First of all, he starts the whole thing with the genealogy, which cannot be lost on us. That wasn't like, dude, who edited this for you, man? Like, you need to fire that guy and get to the good stuff. This is the good stuff. 1 through 15 is the good stuff. We just have to step back into a space to be able to see it. The genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of David. He's identifying him as king, as royalty. Mark will see Jesus as servant. John will see Jesus as the Son of God. And the miracles that they pull from and the relationships and the way the prayers are presented and all these things filter through those four lenses. Messiah, king, Messiah servant, Messiah man, and Son of God. You can see it in the genealogies. When you look at this genealogy, it's a genealogy of kings. Things aren't exactly accurate. Things are moved around a little bit. Names are plugged in. It's really a brother, but the other brother was the king, so he's named. It was a genealogy of kings for Matthew. For Luke, it's about humanity. The direction goes a different way. Look at that, if you haven't noticed that. The direction of the genealogy goes a different way between Luke and Matthew. Mark doesn't say anything about a genealogy. There's not one single begat in Mark because it's Messiah. What was Mark? Messiah servant. Who cares about the genealogy of a servant? No one. Not even mentioned. John gives a genealogy. Does anybody know what it was? Some of us can quote it. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Boom. That's John's genealogy. All that I read here, and Zimran, and all these names, right? Abijah, all these things, right? He says, there was God, the Word was with him, and they were the same. That's the entire genealogy, because he sees him as the Son of God. And so as we read through this, I find it powerfully illuminating to have this context as we read through. This is a book about royalty. It's a book about Jesus being king, about Jesus having power over things. Kingship. The Magi, they were kings. They were considered kings in this reading. I mean, we call them astronomers and different things like that, and none of us probably actually know, but they were considered kings here. The kings of the East. The kings came to worship the King of Kings. That's all set up intentionally. Herod is mentioned. Herod's role as king. King Herod. And when King Herod met the Magi, and they said, "We're going to worship this baby boy," he says, "Let me know, because I'd love to go worship him too." Right? Like, yeah. Planning to kill the child when they are told in a dream and warned in a dream to not go back to Herod and they leave, he's furious. And what does that king do? That king directs an infanticide based on the years of the sign and the star and such and all those different things, 2 years and younger. I read today 11,000 children potentially. The king was trying to kill the king. But the story continues. As you'll read this week, the tyrant king dies and the infant king lives. And lives miraculously. Lives because God is involved. God gives a dream to his dad and says, "You need to go here. And then you need to do this and be here." It's led by the Spirit. So as you read through these chapters, I hope that my voice and these thoughts will be guiding some of that for you. That you'll read that and you're like, "Oh, he's guided there. Infant king lives." Now, this story of King Herod is not in any other account of the gospel. Did you know that? A lot of times for Christmas, we look at Luke's account of the gospel. Luke, it's not in there. You know why it's not in there? Because Luke's not worried about Messiah king. Matthew has that story about a king that wants to take out another king, and it's the rising conflict, because that's Matthew's angle and that's Matthew's story. It's not this, all the children and all that other business happening. That's not in any of the authors, nobody else. Messiah king. Now, I'd like to go back through these. I promise I'm not going to do all 15, although it would be fun. I want to go back through these and see what we might have missed. I'm just going to read 1 through 6, so if you'll cue that, I just want to go 1 through 6. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham. That should ring for us, son of David, king. Abraham was the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob. We know that, right? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, patriarchs. Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah was one of the sons, right, with Joseph, all those guys. Now, Judah was the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Okay, so what should you notice right there? There's a woman in there. That's not okay. No, no, no. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nahshon. Nahshon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Another woman. That editor, I don't know what's going on here. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Third. Obed, the father of Jesse. Jesse, the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. She's not even given a name. What's her name? Bathsheba. 1 through 6, just like that. 1 through 6, things jump out of that are meaningful. Meaningful not just for Hebrew genealogy, but meaningful for Messiah message. You see, it's not Jesus King of the Jews, it's Jesus Messiah King. Messiah King. What will these readings tell us of his ways? What will these readings show us about him? Not only in a book where genealogy is everything, not only are they adding women, 5 women, Mary being the 5th, but they're adding women of these kind of women. These aren't the women you bring home to meet mama. Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Bathsheba, and the teenager, Mary. Those five women noted specifically in this gospel, in the genealogy of this gospel, in a culture where I would say, hey there, how's it going, Josh? Good to see you, man. How's Christian? Yeah, how's Josiah? I'm not going to ask about Mindy, and I'm not going to ask about your daughter. Before I ask about them, I'm like, how's the dog? Right? I met the big dog the other day. He's a beast. How's the beast? Right? How are the chickens? I'll ask about everybody else before I ask about your wife or your daughter, because they're not on the radar. They're not on the list. They're not on the it matters list in this culture. Yet, Matthew puts them in there. That cannot be lost on us. That cannot be lost on us. Tamar, Genesis 38. Tamar was the daughter-in-law of Judah. I thought it said Judah had two kids with her. Oh, that's not good. That's Friday night TV after 10 o'clock. That's not good. You know the story? Judah had three boys, and Tamar married the oldest. The oldest died. And in that culture, the other younger brothers would then marry the widow and raise children to their brother. It's a little graphic story, but the guy's not going to do it. And so God kills him. And then he says, hey, hang on. Now I lost two boys here, so I promise my younger boy. It'd be like my son, Chip. I'm like, he's 12. When he's of age, he'll marry you. And now he's 22, and Tamar is over here recognizing ain't nothing going on here. He's forgot Judah, my father-in-law, who needs to take care of me because, again, women, if you didn't take care of them, they were lost. No fault of their own, the way the culture was. So Judah's wife dies. And Tamar sees that Judah's wife dies, and she's not given to the boy or any of that, and he's of age to marry, and she's like, well, I got a little idea here. So the story goes, patriarchs, amazing. The story goes that he's tending sheep or whatever he's doing, like working down the road, and sees this woman on the side of the road. She dresses up like a prostitute. It's Tamar. Dresses like a prostitute to entice her father-in-law, who comes to her and says, hey, how much does it cost to hang out with you for about an hour? And she says, what do you got? He said, well, I got this, and that. I'll send you a calf. She says, okay, well, the calf's not with you, so what can you give me now? He goes, well, how about that ring and that signet? How about that staff? Okay, well, here's my staff, and here's my ring, and I think there was a third thing he gave, these three things he gives her. She holds them. He's with her. Come to find out, she gets pregnant with the two boys thus named in genealogy, the twins. And then he goes back, sends one of his guys with the goat or the calf or whatever it was, sends him there to get his stuff back. The guy shows up and he's like, hey, where was the temple prostitute that was out here? And the locals are like, Hoss, ain't no temple prostitute out here. Really? Well, she got my, oh, well, okay. So he goes home and reports. The guy's like, well, whatever, no big deal. We'd be shamed if they knew what was going on anyway. You read it closely, Genesis 38. And then, rising conflict. You guys are loving this, aren't you? This is like, you didn't know. You know the story. Rising conflict. She starts to show. She's showing, her pregnancy is showing. Word gets back to Judah, and Judah says, burn her. Like, fire burn her. Let's put a post in the ground and burn her. And she says, no problem. Hey, before you light a match, who do these belong to? You got the rest of the story. That is who we're bringing up? Oh, yes. My heart rejoices that that is who we're bringing up. Heart rejoices that Tamar is in the mix. My heart rejoices Judah. It helps Andy accept that he's in the mix. Rahab was a prostitute. And Tamar was just playing a role. She just did that one time that we're aware of. Rahab is identified as Rahab the prostitute in Jericho. And a couple of the guys were hidden by her. And she held the scarlet cord out of the window. And because of all that, not only is she and her household saved, but she becomes a grandma to Jesus. Rahab, prostitute. My heart sings that she is in the genealogy. When you read over Tamar, when you read over Rahab, because there's nothing there and you're waiting to get to the good parts, you missed the good parts. Ruth was a kind woman. Whether thou goest, I will go, and whether thou lodgest, I will lodge, and your people will be my people, and your God, my God. That is a beautiful speech. One of the most beautiful in all of Scripture. Except she was a Moabitess. She was from Moab. Not allowed in the pure line of Jesus Christ, except she was. Absolutely. No one from Ammon and Moab and none of that. Out and kill them and done. No, except somehow she snuck in. When I was in college, I was connected to a family, and he was the pastor of the church. It was the pastor and his wife, and they had two boys, four of them. Now, the wife's mother, we call her Meemaw, the wife's mother, Meemaw, she came up to me one day, strong woman, a little gruff even, heavy voice kind of like this, Andy. She said, "How'd you wiggle your way into that family?" She said, "It's always been therefore and no more. And for years, people have tried, big church, people have tried to get in their family. How'd you wiggle in to their family?" I said, "I don't know. I just showed up. I'm just lovable." Right? You see, we're not supposed to be in the family. Hello? Dana's not here today, I don't think. As far as I'm aware, she's the only Jew in the room. The rest of us aren't supposed to be there. Except Ruth was. You read over Ruth, you missed something. You skip Tamar, and you skip Rahab, and you skip Ruth to get to the good parts. You've missed the good parts. It's a slow reading. It's an asking questions. It's a recognizing. It's asking the Spirit to show us. Uriah's wife, she's not even named. Bathsheba, so many of us know that story. You may not be familiar with Rahab. You may not be familiar with Ruth, probably not Tamar. But most of us know the David and Bathsheba thing, right? Probably a Jew, but she was so connected to Uriah, who was a Hittite. Hittites got killed also. Like, there was these little varied connections. It wasn't the melting pot, right? Like we live in here. These different things that were happening of inclusion. These are statements of inclusion. And in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12, we hear that whole story about Bathsheba. She becomes a grandmother of the Messiah. The promise. Wouldn't you like to be a grandfather or a grandmother of the promise? Wouldn't you? Let me tell you something. You ready? You are. You are. You have the potential. Every one of us have the potential to be the grandparent of a promise. Oh, yeah, but you're going to say something about it, right? Tyler mentioned a little bit earlier about disqualifying ourselves and all those kinds of things, you know, and what I'm qualified to be and not be. No. Please, let me introduce you to Matthew chapter 1. And then of all things, a teenager to give birth, an unwed teenager. What's the message that you get from this? What's the message that you get from what I'm telling you this morning? I hope it's a message of inclusion. I hope it's a message of redemption. I hope it's a message of I'm never too far off. I hope it's a message of God's transcendence. Where can I go from your presence? Where can I flee from your spirit? If I make my bed in the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you see me there. On the far side of the sea, the other side of the world, where can I go? What's the answer? Can't go that far. Without his transcendence being there for us. This would be an excellent time for all of us to hand a microphone around and get some coffee and talk about the stories that are represented in this room of God reaching, of God working, of God saying, oh, but I got my eye on you. I didn't have my eye on him. He said, yeah, but I got my eye on you, son. Reaching out, pulling us from our own desperations, pulling us from our own brokenness, pulling us from our own idolatry and sin. What's this do, these 15 verses in Matthew 1, that as I was reading through them, be honest, come on, this is not the place to lie. Maybe it is the place to lie, I don't know. How many of us like, how many people, the thought crossed your mind, dear God, I hope he doesn't read the entire five chapters. How many of these begats is he going to read? Oh, Lord, we're trusting you right now. I mean, come on, right, really? How many people that crossed your mind? You're like, oh, woo, it's going to be a long morning. How about if I read them again, how would you be different? Not so different. When you read them this week, it should be different. When you read through and you see those names mean something. There's a message in them. Because you see, the way this works, this begat thing, I'll just fill in the blanks here for you. This begat thing requires all of these guys and another gal. But only five were mentioned. Maybe they were the five miraculous ones. Mary was clearly miraculous, but more miraculous than Ruth or Bathsheba or Rahab or Tamar. I think that's the good part, but let's look at the classic good parts. Let's just kind of land the plane here with the classic good parts. So we got the birth of Jesus, right? I read about that. We got Mary, we got a stable, we got the star, all that. But Matthew goes behind the scene. And as you're reading, I want you to not just look at plot, but I also want you to think about patterns and like the purpose of the writer. So here's what I want to do. I want to Elijah, you ready to go? Okay, boss, here we go. I want you to see this. As you read through, and we're still in chapter 1, we're going to move into chapter 2. As you read through here, I want you to see God's intentionality. God's plan, God's purposes. Real quickly, as you look through chapter 1, you get to chapter 1, verses 22 and 23. If you've got these, I may just work off the screens. All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet, verse 23. The virgin will be with child and give birth to a son. You're going to call him Emmanuel. That means God with us. Do you understand that whole virgin, God with us, Emmanuel thing was a fulfillment of a prophecy? All these to fulfill. Fulfill what? Isaiah 7:14. Let's look at this quickly. Lord himself give you a sign, virgin conceive, give birth to a son. Call him Emmanuel. That happened in Isaiah. And it was brought to pass in Matthew chapter 1. That's number 1. Number 2, in chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. Let me flip my screen here. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. On and on. Out of you will come a ruler who's going to shepherd his people Israel. We just read about all this. It's a fulfillment of what? Well, it's a fulfillment of Micah chapter 2. Throw that up there. Micah chapter 2. You, Bethlehem, you're small among the clans. And out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel. Bethlehem was the place. It was prophesied to be that place, and it happened. He'll be God with us. It was prophesied, and it happened. Chapter 2, verse 15. When they stay, where he stayed until the death, this is about him being in Egypt. He stayed until the death of Herod, and so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet. Out of Egypt I call my son. That's a fulfillment of Hosea chapter 11. Look at this. When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. Number three. Here's four. In 2:17, same thing. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. It talks about a voice in Ramah and crying out and could not, but it's out of Jeremiah. Take us to Jeremiah 31. Look at this. The Lord says this, a voice is heard in Ramah, mourning, great weeping. Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more. That's what happened in that infanticide. That was prophesied in Jeremiah. And we know that, and we can see that, and we can put those two together. But let me just point something out in verse 16. That was 15, right? Ramah and Rachel and weeping and sadness. Did that happen? Did 15, 31, 15, did it happen? It did happen. It did, in fact, come to pass. It was, in fact, fulfilled. If 15 is fulfilled, you think 16 and 17 get fulfilled? Look at the benefit. Look at the present that we get. This is what the Lord says. Restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work will be rewarded. They will return from the land of the enemy. So there is hope for your descendants. Your children will return to their own land. That's not a promise to me. That was a promise to somebody else. But not just the weeping and Bethlehem and can't be comforted and all that, but he says, take hope. Your children will return to their land. Did that happen? It did, in fact, happen. Four and five. And this last one, 2:23. He went and he lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets. He'll be called a Nazarene. Now, here's the problem with that. Hold that. Nazareth is never mentioned in the Old Testament. But look at this. Through the prophets. So there were multiple prophets here. Multiple people spoke that Jesus would be called a Nazarene coming from Nazareth. A Nazarite, by the way, is a John the Baptist. Doesn't cut his hair, doesn't drink wine, doesn't touch dead things. That's John the Baptist was a Nazarite. Samson was a Nazarite. This is a Nazarene. He lives in Nazareth, right? So that's what's going on here. Prophets said it, except there's not a mention of Nazareth in the entire Hebrew Scriptures. But it's fulfilled. Just like the prophet said. Now in John 1, go ahead and take us there. Nazareth was a synonym for being despised. Now this is the Gospel of John, but check this out. Philip found Nathanael, and he told him, hey, we found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Look at this. Can any good thing come from there? What? Can any good thing come from there? Every place has that other place. Can any good thing come out of that? Nazareth was a place for the despised. So I want to point out that between chapter 1:23 to chapter 2:23, five times Matthew shares a fulfillment. Five times. What's the message you get from that? As you read through these and you hear the word fulfilled, fulfilled, as it is written, fulfilled, fulfilled. So, believer, what's the message you get from that? Seeker, what's the message that you get when you read five times these prophecies were fulfilled? Do you get the word intentional? Do you get purposeful? Do you get that there's something bigger than us? What does it do for your faith? What does it do for your faith about your life when you can read and prophetically something was said and decades, years later, it's fulfilled? Not once, but five times at least. What does that do for us today? What does that do for your faith when you realize God says it and then it happens? What's that do for you this morning? What's that going to do for you this week as you're reading through? So Matthew 3 is the interaction with John the Baptist, and 4 is the temptation of Christ in the wilderness. That's a wonderful passage, chapter 4. And then 5 is what Teresa led us into today, the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. So as we read through these this week, my encouragement is, you don't just look for plot, not just, oh, that's a nice story. What's being said about Messiah King? What's being said about fulfillment and purpose? And why is it written to you? So let me give you some things to consider. Arnie, you come on up, man. We're going to take communion here in just a moment. Before we do that, I want to give you some things to consider. You can listen to the Christ Way Connect podcast. Over the last year, we have been working through a book called Celebration of Discipline. We had one chapter to go, and you'll have to read that one on your own. We're going to shift gears. We're going to, on Wednesday, have a podcast about whatever the reading is on Wednesday. Now, not legalizing it that you have to read chapter 1 on Monday and chapter 2 on Tuesday and chapter 3 on Wednesday, but whatever the middle one is, or moving forward, we're going to get together, and you'd be able to download that on a Wednesday morning. Typically, it's ready about 6, 7 in the morning. It's ready early. It downloads early in the morning. On a Wednesday morning, that will be ready for you. For what reason? Well, you can turn it on and listen and hear what we're talking about, that particular chapter that you might be reading that particular day. Why would we do that? Connections. One more touch. One more way to try to enhance or illuminate or engage, right? And you hear that, and maybe that's the only one you read all week, but you hear that conversation for 20, 30 minutes, and then you read that chapter. That's all in purpose. That's all intentional to help make those connections. Maybe you want to watch the Bible Project. Anyone familiar with Bible Project? Bible Project is this cool thing with Tim Mackey where this guy draws these things as he's talking through the book of the Bible, and it just expands. It's illuminating. It's amazing. Bible Project. Every book of the Bible is in there. Tyler and I, the guy that led prayer today, Tyler and I, we've been doing Bible Project videos for 2 years, working through the entire Bible. Where are we, man? Thessalonians or somewhere? We're about like Thessalonians. We didn't meet last week, so I'm remembering. Thessalonians, I think we just finished up. So we're getting close. Another 2 years, we'll be done. But we're working through the whole Bible watching these videos. What do you mean watching the videos? I mean we sit down at 7 in the morning on Wednesday and we turn on the TV and we watch the video. And then you begin to see the picture. How many of you, you don't have to raise your hand, might find Bible reading challenging? I get it. Thus saith. I get it. It's challenging. You got to do the reps. Find a translation that works for you. Find one that works for you. Find one with language that makes sense to you. And then do the reps. You just got to do the reps. You got to read a couple of books. You got to show up a few Sundays in a row. And then you get some momentum. And Tyler, is that not true? Things start making, I'll tell them the testimony. I taught out of Hebrews 2 years ago. And Tyler came up and he said, I don't know any of the stories you were talking about. Like, I read what you said in Hebrews, but the things you're referencing and Melchizedek, and I don't even know what that is. Like, I have no idea what's going on. And his request was, could we get together and could you teach me a Bible study about the context of the Bible? I'm like, yes, I can. And we have been. And we are seeing themes and stuff just comes together and things fall out. And you're like, oh, you know, you get something in Galatians. You're like, oh, that was like an Old Testament theme that is now fulfilled. Right, that. You've got to do the reps. So, read a different version. Break from the familiar. You know, a lot of us, we were talking about, I think you did something last week, I don't remember what it was, but you were quoting a verse and you kicked into King James. It was up there in NIV and you were quoting it in a King James version. Because for some of us, that's just all we heard till we were 30 years old. like we memorize the King James Bible, right? And if that's the Bible that you're reading, I'm not knocking the KJV, but if that's the Bible that you're reading, read a different one. Find something else. Or if it's meaningful for you to read the same thing, read that. But if it would be illuminating for you to maybe get a contemporary English version, a Message, Passion Translation, something like that, read it. Hold them together. We bought a Bible for Tina that has NIV and Message together, right? She loved those together. She says, man, I wish I had a Bible that had both of those. We can do that for you. We have contacts. We know how to get this done. Do those things. And then the last thing I would say is the YouVersion Bible app. If you don't have the Bible app, YouVersion, you should get it. Here's how I use it. I often use it on my way to work. In the morning, I will type in Matthew 1, and I will hit it, and this very deep British man will read to me on my way to work. The Gospel of John. You know, that kind of thing going on, right? And I get to hear that all the way to work. And you know what? I finish a chapter before I get to work. Do the reps. Hear the word. Are you an auditory learner? Listen to the Bible. Are you tactile? Hold the scripture. Get a couple of them together. If you're a journaler, take notes. But what do we want to all do? We want to bounce it off each other. We want to talk about it together in community. Let's get to the good stuff. What do you say? Who's with me? Let's get to the good stuff. The inclusion, the redemption, the connection. Because what we're doing, and we're going to do it right now when we take communion, we're creating pathways, connecting people. That's what we do here. That's the ministry of this church, creating a pathway that allows people to be connected. We can't make you walk the path, but we can create a pathway for you. And that's what this is. And that's what communion is, right? One bread, one body, connection, a transcendent purpose, intentional, all those kinds of things. So what I'm going to ask you to do today, they're going to play, they're going to sing a little bit. And the communion's, it's in the normal spots, right? A couple in the back and some up here. It's about 11:30. So if you have to take off, no worries. Blessings to you and Happy New Year, those things. If you're able to hang around with us, we're going to take communion together as a family, as a community of faith. And so what I'd ask you to do is as they begin to play, you can come up and take one. Just come back to your seat, and I will lead us all together in a closing communion. It's about this walking together thing. Not isolated, not on the fringes, not on the fringes of the herd, not on the fringes of the pack, but together, walking together. So why don't you stand with me if you would, and if you make your way up, and if it's more convenient for you to go to the back, please help yourself to communion on the back as well. They're doubled up. So you'll have a communion cup, and then underneath it would be the wafer. You guys can start singing. Think of this, I want us to sing this next verse. As you think of this, and then we'll take it together.